second case for oral argument this morning is State of South Dakota versus Casey Morgan. Mr. Morgan being the appellant, and Mr. Mitchell Johnson is an attorney from Rapid City representing Mr. Morgan. The state, the appellee, is represented by Ms. Kirsten Jasper, an assistant attorney general. We have had some difficulty this morning with the excessive heat in the courtroom, so hopefully we will proceed with the windows open and there will not be interference with noise, and invite counsel to take your water up to the podium, although it doesn't seem to be too bad here right now, but who knows. So with that, Mr. Johnson, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Good morning. Casey Morgan was convicted in October of 2011 of felony child abuse in violation of SCCL section 26101 and was sentenced to 15 years in the South Dakota State Prison with 10 years suspended. He was convicted for conduct which involved him pinching his fiancée's six-year-old daughter's cheeks together while scolding her in their home before school on the morning of January 26, 2011. The little girl had been fighting and arguing with her three-year-old half-brother, who happens to be Casey Morgan's son. The little girl couldn't find her school book and blamed her brother. She was upset because she had not done her reading assignment and had not completed her schoolwork the night before. Now, this pinching caused some very small reddish purplish marks on her face. Now, this particular case involves an examination of the thin line separating the parental discipline privilege under SDCL 22.18.5.
Can I stop you there? Because I, how does your client fit under that privilege? As I understand it, he's not a parent to this little girl.
That's true.
So because the statute talks about the parental privilege applying to a parent, a guardian, or an authorized agent. But as I understand it, which one was he, or was he any of those?
In this case, he was viewed as an authorized agent.
So did the mother then testify in court that she authorized him to administer corporal punishment on her daughter?
No, that was
so
not.
So how would he be an authorized agent?
Well, the facts that developed at trial were that he lived in this home with his fiance, the mother of the six-year-old girl, and they have a three-year-old son together. So as it relates to, this was a family unit, as it relates to the little girl, he certainly stood in the position of in loco parentis.
So that wasn't, apparently that his applicability under that statute wasn't argued at
no,
the trial.
No, not at all.
So are we bound by that? I mean, it's a question of law. Are we bound by that then, that he's protected by that statute because it was not argued below?
Do you mean it wasn't argued by the state or wasn't argued by the defense?
I would say argued wasn't brought up by the state. You know, that he's claiming protection under this statute, and somewhat, I mean, at least in my mind, somewhat questionable whether he's covered because he's not a parent, guardian, or authorized agent. And that statute seems to be explicit. It doesn't talk about in loco parentis relationships. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm wondering, are we bound by that because the state didn't argue that issue below? In other words, I don't want to raise an issue against your client that the state hasn't raised against your client.
Well, the issue, our position is that he was an authorized agent of his mother. He lived in the same household. They're a family unit. Again, he has a three-year-old son with the mother, and he was put in a position that morning to get the children ready for the day and get this child off to school, just as if it was his biological child. So that's our position. Now, in viewing the evidence most favorable to the verdict in this case, we submit the evidence submitted is insufficient to support the jury's verdict. The evidence is insufficient to establish beyond a reasonable doubt that Casey Morgan's correction of this child is abuse under the statute. And moreover, the evidence is insufficient to establish beyond a reasonable doubt that Casey Morgan's correction of this child was not reasonable in manner and moderate and not moderate in degree. Now, how should we determine whether a parent has crossed the line? How should we assess whether a parent is a criminal and has violated the statute, or simply being a parent who has disciplined his or her daughter and is afforded protection under the statute?
Well, isn't the question answer to that question easy?
Pardon me?
Isn't the answer to that question easy?
I don't believe so.
The jury makes the call.
Certainly the jury makes the call, Your Honor, but In this case, the facts that were relied on by the state do not establish a case.
So you're asking us to make that as a decision or a legal conclusion?
No, what I'm asking the court to do is to review South Dakota cases, which we have a number of cases in South Dakota where we've discussed whether or not abuse has occurred, both in the context of a criminal case and in the context of an A&N case. And also, in those cases, the children were victims. I've cited the court to State versus Beck, State versus Wells, State versus Augustine, State versus Wright, and some in abuse and neglect cases in the interest of initial DAJ, in interest of CF, in interest of TA. And if you looked at those cases collectively, you'll see that these children in those cases suffered from lacerations, there was beatings, burns, some of the children were kicked, they were subjected to blunt force trauma, they were hit with weapons such as belt buckles and so forth, some lost blood, some needed medical attention, they suffered serious physical injuries, and they suffered more than transient pain. I think this was kind of an important factor in the interest of CF, is that this court said that children who are subjected to extended pain, that constitutes abuse.
Is there any dispute here as to what happened? I mean, apparently you got two witnesses, the little girl and the defendant. Are they telling the same story basically about what occurred?
Well, in this case, there is no dispute on the facts. The defendant did not testify. In fact, the defense put on no case whatsoever. But there's no dispute on the facts. And I can get to those in a moment because I want to compare those facts to what this court and other courts have relied on to determine what objective facts do we look at to determine whether there's abuse or whether a parent is entitled to the parental privilege. Now, in those cases that I just cited from South Dakota, where there were serious injuries, there's bruises, extensive, some scarring was involved. None of those parents in those cases would be able to afford themselves or avail themselves of the defense under the 2218.5. And certainly in none of those cases would, based on the totality of the circumstances, would a court find that their discipline used was reasonable in manner or moderate in degree. Now, I've cited this court to some other jurisdictions. The case versus State versus Lefevre, which is a case from New Mexico. In that case, a father grabbed his 12-year-old daughter's hand very firmly. And in doing so, he squeezed so tight that it left a dime-sized bruise on her hand. And he admonished her for putting her hand in her brother's backpack, and he was charged with battery. He was convicted. He appealed on the grounds of insufficient evidence. That court ruled in favor of the parent. And in doing so, it said that in considering whether the state has disproved the justification, the court or jury is entitled to consider such factors as the age, physical condition, and other characteristics of a child, as well as with the gravity of the child's misconduct, the kind of marks or wounds inflicted on the child's body, and the nature of the instrument used for punishment. Now, in that case, they ruled in favor of the parent because it was an isolated incident, just like this case. The bruise involved was temporary in nature. It was small. The pain suffered by the child was transient. In other words, it was temporary. It wasn't extended. The force used was inconsequential, and the injury was marginal. And based on that, they ruled in favor of the father. I've also, I didn't have this case in my brief, but in State versus Robertson, it's 220 specific 3rd 1052. It's a Hawaii case in 2009.
Then you should furnish copies to the court. Shirley, how many is that, 10?
10 copies, please.
Okay, I will do that.
And the counsel, too.
Thank you. In that case, a Marine sergeant spanked his son with a belt and left a number of bruises on his son. And the court there noted, just like in South Dakota, because there's no bright line the permissible degree of force will vary according to the child's physique and age, the misconduct of the child, the nature of the discipline, and all the surrounding circumstances. And in that case, they also noted that bruises are not necessarily indicative of excessive corporal punishment. Again, in that particular case, they ruled in favor of the father. And in doing so, they noted that the resulting bruises did not result in the need for medical care. There were no open wounds. There was no bruises. The bruises were no longer visible when the child was examined by the physician 8 days later. The child did not complain of any pain following the discipline, and the evidence established that he was able to resume his normal activities.
All right, are you asking us to develop a test with those types of factors?
No, well, certainly it would be helpful to have a similar discussion in our case law as relates to those factors, but I think this court, you can infer from the court's prior decisions that we do look for special aggravating circumstances. We do look for objective test evidence in our cases, and I believe that if you look at in matter of CF, we talk about extended pain, and so on and so forth. But I'm not suggesting that this court needs to develop a new test as much as we need to look at what objective criteria do the trial courts and juries should they look to see if there's sufficient evidence to support the verdict.
Didn't the legislature do that in 2218.5 when they said force used is reasonable in manner and moderate in degree?
Yeah, but how do we get there? That's my point in this case, is how do we get to that point? Obviously,
isn't that a jury question?
Well, that's what it comes down to, obviously, but what constitutes reasonableness? I'm submitting that based on the cases, in this particular case, according to the evidence that was presented to this jury, we have a 6-year-old child. She is capable of cognitive thought. Okay, she's old enough to be disciplined. She knows the difference between right and wrong. She knows she should not argue with her 3-year-old brother, and she knows that not doing her homework is wrong and misplacing her school book is wrong. So the issue there then was discipline rendered necessary? Okay, she's a 6-year-old, but she should learn something from this. Okay, there was no wounds inflicted on this child. The bruises were very small, and in fact, you can see the photographs that were submitted to the trial, to the jury, show these very small bruises. The bruises were temporary. There's absolutely no evidence in the record that these bruises existed beyond the date in question. Any pain she may have felt that morning was focused on her lip area and was transient. In fact, after talking to her first grade teacher at 8:15 that particular morning, she did not complain of any pain after that point. In fact, by all accounts, after talking to her first grade teacher, she quit crying, she calmed down, she was articulate, she was friendly, she didn't appear to be in any distress, and I believe she had spoken to the principal of the school, she had spoken to the liaison officer at the school, and she'd also spoken to a DSS worker, all of which confirmed this. Then she was taken to the hospital, which is standard protocol, and Dr. Hill conducted a 5-minute examination of her, and he testified that the small marks on her face were not serious. According to Dr. Hill, the bruises were superficial, and the pinching of her cheeks did not cause any harm underneath the skin. These were minor discolorations. The marks were not caused by blunt force trauma. The child was not hit, slapped, or punched. Child was not choked. He testified unequivocally to that. No medical attention was required. I believe that's significant. No medical treatment or prescriptions were required. She was not placed at a substantial risk of harm. No instruments were used, like a belt, switch, belt buckle, or other similar instruments. The injury was marginal and the force was inconsequential. The scolding and subsequent pinching of her cheeks was an isolated incident. There's absolutely no evidence that this had ever occurred before between Casey Morgan and this 6-year-old girl. So the point here, I'm saying that these facts don't arise to the level of abuse. And moreover, I believe they show objective criteria, based on objective criteria, they show that the correction of this child was reasonable in manner and moderate in degree. So based on the totality of the circumstances, based on the fact that there doesn't appear to be any special aggravating circumstances in this case, unlike prior South Dakota cases, in our ANN cases that I've cited in my brief and in the criminal cases that I've cited in my brief, unlike those cases, there's no special aggravating circumstances in this case. And based upon that, we fall into this gray area where if it falls within that area, the verdict can only be one thing, and that's not guilty. It's, in this case, we are asking the court to reverse and remand the court to the trial court with instructions for a judgment of acquittal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Jasper, you have 20 minutes.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. This really isn't a case about a mere slight pinching of the child's face. When you look at the pictures in this case, what you see are extensive bruises across the child's jawline, her chin. There's bruising up along the side of her cheeks as well as around her neck. Not only that, she had what her teacher described as a very, very swollen lip. And he used so much force, significant amount of force, according to Dr. Hill, that it burst a blood vessel in her eye. These are the injuries that occurred with this simple squeezing or pinching of this child's face. This was over-the-top discipline. What did this child do? She was a six-year-old child. She got into an argument about a book with her three-year-old brother. That's typical six-year-old and three-year-old behavior. This isn't anything where she was threatening her three-year-old brother with any sort of physical harm. There's no evidence of that. There's no evidence that she was out of control and couldn't have immediately been told, honey, calm down. None of that was in the record. There's nothing in the record that this is persistent behavior by this child. What 22.18.5 says is that the restraint or correction used has to be rendered necessary by the misconduct of the child. This child's misconduct, simply arguing with her three-year-old brother, not doing her homework, does not render necessary grabbing of her face with enough force to cause all of those injuries. What happened on that morning was after Kayan, or the child, woke up, she was looking for her guided reading book, her homework. It's her first grade homework for every night. She found that her brother had it, and they had a fight about the book. At this point, Mr. Morgan got out of the shower, was very upset that she hadn't done her homework, grabbed her face. As he was holding on and squeezing her face, he said to her six times, what do we do, what do we do? He held it for that period of time to the point that the child testified she was having problems breathing, but he held it until she told him that we do our homework. That's when he let go. At that point, she started crying. She continued crying until she, as she was getting her coat on and getting ready to get into the car for school. She testified that as they were headed to school, Mr. Morgan told her to stop crying, but she said she couldn't because it really hurted. She was late to school that morning. When she was late to school, she went to the school office to get chapstick because of her swollen lip. She was then escorted to her classroom, still crying and sobbing, according to her teacher, sobbing to the point that it affected her breathing. She continued to sob while she took her coat off and hung it up in the classroom. She continued to cry and sob when she went and talked to her teacher about what had happened that morning. Finally, when she sat down at her desk, her teacher testified it took about 10 to 20 minutes for her to completely calm down. That's an extended period of time to cry.
How do you distinguish, for example, the Hawaii case among the other cases counsel quotes in his brief? You know, in this Hawaii case he cites, the daughter. The father beat the daughter with a plastic backpack, a plastic hanger, the flat side of a car brush, and the plastic handle of a tool, and left bruises on her arm and other and markings. And the Hawaii Supreme Court said there's not sufficient evidence. How do you distinguish that case?
That case isn't controlling in the state of South Dakota, obviously, but our what our legislature have said is they've given us the test that's in 22.18.5, whether the child's misconduct renders the punishment necessary, and then the punishment needs to be reasonable in manner and moderate in degree. And when you look at the cases in our state, CF, for instance, CF, it was also a spanking with a belt, but in that case, there was no bruising. There was no evidence of any bruising. We have bruising here. Not only do we have bruising, we have a swollen lip and a burst blood vessel in the eye. The other thing we have in this case is a six-year-old child and the misconduct she had. All of the factors in this case are completely distinguishable from that case. And when you look at the case law in our state, especially in the interest of TA and the interest of CF, those are cases where the child's misconduct was much more aggravated than the child in this case. And it's still, the abuse that was used, let me rephrase that, the correction that was used in those cases was deemed unreasonable. And here, in our state, the jury is given the decision of what reasonableness is. A lot of legal standards are based on the reasonable man theory, or reasonableness. Here we have 12 jurors in a room listening to this evidence. They've been instructed on what 22.18.5 says. That it has to be rendered necessary, that it has to be moderate in manner, moderate manner, reasonable in degree. And those 12 jurors, they're the ones that decided reasonableness based on all of those factors and the facts in this case. And they said it was unreasonable, all of them. Not only did the jurors in that case, if he's concerned that the jurors didn't understand the state of the law, we even had the trial court state at sentencing that what this man was charged with is inappropriate discipline in any respect. This is not paddling on the butt, which the trial court said they had no qualms about. This is a direct infliction of pain, significant pain and bruising, substantial, consistent with that, for behavior that doesn't even call for a swat on the butt. This was not done homework. This was wrestling with their brother. Even the trial court, who had the experience of knowing what the law is in the state, thought it was unreasonable when he sentenced this individual. Not only that, they're talking, I believe Mr. Johnson said that there was no evidence of blunt force trauma. You're right. Dr. Hill did not say blunt force trauma. Nope. What he said was that the force that was used in this case was the equivalent to falling or smacking their head on something, that if she was squeezed, she was squeezed pretty hard. Not only that, he was concerned with some of the bruising around her neck to the point that he said it wasn't choking or squeezing. But some of that bruising was consistent with a child or with injuries that related to hanging or choking. So there were some concerning things that occurred concerning injuries with regard to this child. This court has always refused to resolve any conflicts in the evidence, the passing of credibility, and the weight given to the evidence. That's the job of the jury. And that's what the jury in this case did. It used the standards that our legislator put in place through the statute 22.18.5, and it weighed whether or not it was reasonable under these circumstances that this six-year-old child should be squeezed with such force to result in the bruises and the injuries that you see in the exhibits that were admitted at trial. This is a fact-specific test, and when you look at the way that the legislature crafted it, it takes into those factors that Mr. Johnson was talking about. It says the child. You have to look at the child as a whole. When the jury was looking at this, do you think they looked at the child as a six-year-old? That was a fact in evidence. The child was six. The child came in and testified. They saw the size of the child. They saw the size of the defendant. Those were all things that they were able to weigh. The conduct is clearly within 22.18.5. They have to look at the conduct, the misconduct of the child, and then the reasonableness in manner and moderate in degree. That's the test that our legislature put in place. We had 12 jurors in this case determine that it was unreasonable. We also have the sentencing judge that agreed with the jurors in that matter. The state respectfully requests that this conviction be affirmed as the actions taken by Mr. Morgan on the morning of January 26th were unreasonable, and it was abusive to the child in this case. And if there's no further questions, I will sit down.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Jasper. Mr. Johnson, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Again, looking at the facts that were presented to this jury, after 8:15 in the morning, this child did not complain of any pain at all. When she saw the doctor some 4 hours later, she still did not complain of any pain, and he testified clearly that this child did not suffer any serious injury, that the pinching of her cheeks did not cause any harm underneath the skin. All of those things, I submit, go in favor of a parent. As noted in the case cited by Justice Konenkamp, and I'm speaking in terms of the, well, you referred to the Lefevre case, or the Matavalli case. In the Lefevre case, that court stated that parents do not always act with calmness of mind or considered judgment when upset with or concerned about their children's behavior, nor do parents always act pursuant to a clearly defined circumstance of discipline or control. A reaction often occurs from the behavior a parent deems inappropriate that irritates or angers the parent, causing a reactive, demonstrative act. Heat of the moment must not result in immoderate physical force and must be managed. However, an angry moment driving moderate or reasonable discipline is often part and parcel of the real world of parenting, with which prosecutors and courts should not interfere. What parent among us can say that he or she has not been angered to some degree from a child's defiant, impudent, or insolent conduct sufficient to call for spontaneous, stern, and meaningful discipline? This court, in the cases, in the abuse and neglect cases, has... You could infer from those cases the objective criteria that we should look to see to determine if abuse has occurred or whether the parent's rights should be recognized under the statute, under the corporal punishment statute. In interest of TA, first of all, there was no justification at all for the discipline that was imposed in that case, and that was a case where that child was whipped. The bruises lasted for 8 to 10 days, and he was hit with a belt, and according to that defendant in that case, he gave that child a pretty good whomp with the belt. That's not what happened in this case. In the interest of DAJ, that case, the child was clearly a victim of abuse. He used a switch on this child's naked body, which resulted in welts, slash marks, all over the child's body. And the child suffered from extended pain due to the beating. In the interest of CF, again, if the court had not determined that that child had suffered from extended pain, the parental rights under 22.18.5 would have been recognized. And they would have ruled in favor of the parent. Because in that case, the child was hit with a belt 6 times, left no marks, but the court determined that extended pain was involved. In this case, that did not happen. Yes, as her father, grabbed her by the face and said, "What are the rules? What are the rules about getting your homework done?" That, in doing so, he left some very minor red marks on her face. You can see the photographs as well as I can. They're not serious. The doctor has testified to that. So there has to be some threshold where parents are protected. I understand we're here to protect children, and that's the job of the courts to do that, but also a parent, and certainly a man in Casey Morgan's position, has certain rights too. And I'm suggesting in this case that this prosecution's gone too far. We should have not interfered with the parenting of this child. The child is not a victim as one contemplated under the statute, and again, I move the court to remand this case to the trial court with instructions to enter a judgment of acquittal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Because we are on the internet, we run on the hour. So we will be in recess until 11 o'clock and then continue on with our next oral argument. We're in recess.